Well, I could make this really simple and probably just follow Dean's talk by saying ditto, because I think we're kind of going through the same process. But I'll go through the talk as it is. I want to give a little bit of idea of the outline of my talk. And basically, the point that I want to do is much like what Dean was saying. These backlogs were not created overnight. And so I want to kind of set time back a little bit to 2008, give you an idea of where we were at in 2008, give you an idea of the Detroit Police Department Crime Laboratory, and then kind of fast forward to today and let you know exactly where we're at today, and then talk significantly about the CSC kit backlog that's occurring in the city of Detroit, and then talk a little bit about some of the pending legislation and possible solutions to a couple of technology issues. So as was stated, Michigan, everybody's familiar with the geography of Michigan. It's the Mitten State. We have seven laboratories within the state. They're geographically positioned throughout the state. We have three, those that are appearing in red with the asterisk, that actually do DNA testing. The other four laboratories have our serology screening portions available to it. In 2008, the important point to point out is that we had 265 people within our forensic science division. We had 13 serologists and 17 DNA analysts, which is a really small number. And so we were not in fantastic shape in 2008 to handle a situation like the Detroit Police Department Crime Laboratory. In 2008, we completed just a shade under 7,300 biology cases. That's about 250 per person per year. And we still carried a backlog in 2008, just shy of 3,000 cases. How did we meet the demand with the small number of people that we had? Much like Dean had mentioned, and I'll reflect that here as well, we have a very dedicated, high-performing staff, and I think that that can be said for just about every laboratory that's out there, as well as the law enforcement agencies. Everybody is very, very dedicated and very interested in moving things along. It's just getting everybody to speak to the same message and work together. We also used a combination of outsourcing. We outsource a fairly significant amount of casework. We have a standing offer to our scientists for 30 hours per pay period. That's every 2 weeks of overtime. I've worked in the division for 15 years, and I think we've had that standing offer of 30 hours per pay period for probably 10 of the 15 years. And as we hire in nice young people that are single, that overtime looks pretty good. Doesn't last particularly long. After about 3 or 4 years, they're pretty much burned out on the overtime. And our average consumption rate, even though 30 hours of overtime is available, our average consumption time is about 6 hours every 2 weeks, just to give you an idea of how burdened they are with that. Out of the 30 people that we did have in 2008, 8 were actually funded federally through NIJ. So we actually can attribute about 22 of our positions in forensic biology just to state funding. We, too, have looked at issues for capacity improvements through automation, and we've become very, very active with General Motors, which, of course, is a huge entity within the state of Michigan, for process mapping, which is a system that a lot of people have been using in forensic biology. Process mapping has been a very big endeavor, and we just incorporated it with General Motors, which I think everybody could agree that if you're working in an assembly line type of situation, they probably are the experts on process mapping. I heard a talk a little bit ago. We had one assistant to a state senator, Senator Cropsey, was speaking a little bit this morning to some of the statistics in Michigan. We have the moniker of having three of the most violent cities in the top 10 in the country. So those would be Saginaw, Flint, and Detroit. All associated with the automobile industry. And then I'm going to focus just a little bit on the city of Detroit. Just historically, and I think everybody can read the news just like I can, historically they're about a size of 2 million people within the city historically. They are down to about 900,000, actually maybe closer to about 850,000 people. So it is definitely a city that's in decline, and it's a very violent city. 400 to 500 homicides per year, and somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,500 sexual assaults per year within the city limits. The Detroit Police Department held the only other accredited crime laboratory in the state. The only discipline within their crime laboratory in 2008 that was accredited was DNA. It was a very large discipline. It had two scientists and one technical leader. And they had other disciplines in firearms, controlled substances, and trace chemistry. Their latent print unit was not part of their laboratory system. It was part of their investigative unit. As I said, biology was the only accredited discipline, and they dealt with similar issues as what everybody else is. Their facility was in very poor condition. They obviously had some staffing issues, and I won't elaborate, but there were some significant communication issues between law enforcement and the prosecutor's office. Their capacity annually in 2008, they did about 350 cases a year, and it doesn't take a Harvard degree in math to see that when you have 400 homicides a year and close to 2,500 sexual assaults, they were hardly touching what was available to them. In a five-year period, they put in 582 profiles in CODIS. 220 of those, as a side note, were the result of outsourcing. 360 is the result of testing that they did within their laboratory system. They closed. I think that's probably pretty well common knowledge. What prompted the closure was a defense expert in firearms who actually was a previous Michigan State Police forensic firearms examiner had noted an inconsistency on a case. It was a very typical shooting within the city of Detroit. It was a assault weapon that discharged about 30 rounds of ammunition in a homicide. And the firearms examiner said that it all came from the same weapon, and believe it or not, it came from about two, if not three, different weapons. As a result of that, from fallout, the state police was asked to do an audit of their laboratory system, and they noted a 10% error rate within their firearms unit. Is a sufficient amount of information for the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office to close that laboratory down, and that was all disciplines, and it was immediate. There was no opportunity to prepare for the closure of that laboratory. Subsequently from that, they requested additional audits of the laboratory. Anytime one of the cases goes forward to court that was processed within that laboratory, it's reanalyzed by our staff. They're doing a five-year audit of the firearms unit as well as a one-year audit of all other disciplines. And we did transfer their CODIS unit to the state police, and there were some technical difficulties with that, just from differences in DNA platform. What did we do in response to that? We hired 12 new scientists. We hired 10 plus two supervisors. I just released 10 of those for actual casework on Friday last week. So they've been hired for about a year, went through a very rigorous training program, and hopefully they're going to be very productive here in the short term. We did have to, in order to accommodate the additional staff that we hired, we had to do a lot of facility renovation and everything within our locations. Just to give you an idea of some of the things that we had to consider that we didn't necessarily understand when they first closed down, was even just transferring evidence to our facility. The Detroit Police Department became the largest submitter of evidence to the state police crime labs overnight, and just process mapping that evidence submission and receipt was incredible. We receive approximately 100 to 125 cases per day, 5 days a week, 365 days a year from the Detroit Police Department. As I said, we get single point of entry. That is an updated number that I have there. We had to find a place to actually store evidence, and I have a picture of some pod storage units that we had to purchase for one of our laboratories. We had to hire a coordinator to move evidence throughout the state. We have two laboratories within the Metro Detroit area that are close by, but the amount of evidence that's coming in, it actually impacts all seven of our laboratories. So we move evidence around the entire state. We've become the FedEx of forensics, I think. We prioritize our cases by court order. Routinely, most every day, we're getting a court order from Wayne County Prosecutor's Office to prioritize cases. And to give you an idea of the geography of Michigan, the farthest laboratory away from Detroit is actually 10 hours, one direction. So getting to court and getting evidence to court can sometimes be a little bit difficult. This is a quick photo of these pod storage units. We actually purchased two for our Northville laboratory, which is about 20 minutes outside the city of Detroit. And this is a view from the inside. It's just stacked with evidence coming in from the city of Detroit. Now, we're 21 months in. I hate to tell you, but our DNA turnaround time is 318 days. It has done nothing but get longer. We have large discrepancies from one area of the state to another. On the western side of the state, where they have sufficient resources, we are at about a 2 to 3 month turnaround time. And when we move cases around, because obviously you want to normalize the situation across the state, basically what happens is you get a lot of law enforcement agencies where they were receiving very nice turnaround times of 2 to 3 months. Now we're looking at 318 days, and the fingers all point towards the city of Detroit. So it does get a little bit difficult there. In 2009, just to give you an idea, we processed 1,609 cases for biology for the city of Detroit. More than 500 profiles entered into CODIS, and we had 227 associations out of those 500 profiles that went in, 84 of which were to sexual assaults. And I already mentioned that we have 12 new scientists, which will account for about 2,500 or 2,600 cases this coming year. Basically, what we were finding is that when we took over the Detroit Police Department Crime Laboratory activities, we found out that many things within the Detroit Police Department needed our assistance. And some of them went from collection of evidence and proper handling of evidence to proper submission of evidence. Much like Dean was saying, you take a vested interest in how the evidence is collected and how it's submitted, because when you're receiving over 100 cases a day, quality stuff in means quality stuff out. And so we took a big interest in that. And basically what occurred is we had one of our administrative commanders do a tour of their evidence facilities and found 10,559 sexual assault kits in their property room. That was 6 months ago. As recent as 2 weeks ago, the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office testified in front of Congress that that number might be as high as 15,000. Couple of things to point out about those sexual assault kits. They represent all of the kits that they have in storage, much like Dean was saying. We're going through a process right now. We're actually trying to figure out what the status is on each and every one of them, and that is definitely a daunting task. The other thing to point out is that this isn't an issue of whether they should have been submitted for testing or not. The Detroit Police Department holds that they were all properly investigated and all properly handled. But when you look at the numbers, when they have 2,500 to 3,000 sexual assault kits a year, and the Detroit Police Department Crime Laboratory did about 10% of that, I think that's a pretty low number for analysis. The kits date back to about 1993, basically. So what we decided to do, and this has been kind of working on for about the past 6 months, is when you have over 10,000 CSC kits and you're looking at the possibility of actually having to process them, the first thing we did is we actually put together a focus group, stakeholders group, and we decided to take a very broad-based approach to it. Obviously, the Michigan State Police, Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, Detroit Police Department are key members of that group. We also reached out to the Prosecutors Association of Michigan, federal partners. There are advocacy groups through the Michigan Domestic Violence Prevention and Treatment Board, and a whole host of groups to get input on how to handle this particular issue. Basically, what we did the first thing is we process mapped it. How are we going to look at all these kits? What is the process that we're going to go through? We felt that it was really important to have a process, because that's the way that you get everybody to adhere to looking at them the same way and not veering from one process to another. And I'll point out, too, that this document is a living document. It changes, seems like monthly, for sure. What we've decided to do is actually, we term this the 400 Project. In order to get a scope of work project out of this, we have identified with Michigan State University's Center for Statistics, in order to get to a 95% confidence interval for being able to predict out what that full 10,559 is going to look like, it would require us to sample a random sample of 400 sexual assault kits. So we're actually in that process right now where we have randomly selected 400 sexual assault kits, and we are going through evaluating all of them, processing them for serology and DNA, and then we'll take that data that we get, give it back to the Michigan State University Center for Statistics, and they will project what the full 10,559 is going to look like. Basically, what this is going to do is it's going to allow us to create a business plan for trying to garner sufficient funding and resources from the laboratory analysis, the investigative resources, the prosecutorial resources, as well as the advocacy resources to actually deal with this particular issue. And much of that funding is available through recovery money as well as NIJ backlog reduction funding. Much like Dean, we are collecting probably more information than what we'll ever use. Some of it is more just to cover ourselves for questions that might be asked in the future. It'll help us out in order to project as well as to hopefully answer any questions that might come. Some of the metrics that we're looking at, we're going to evaluate the cases prior to submitting them for DNA, and we have a team associated with it where we have prosecutors, we have investigators, we have crime victim advocates, and the Prosecutors Association of Michigan that's actually looking at each and every one of these cases prior to submission to the laboratory. And this is being done on the initial 400 cases. We may or may not cover that for carrying over to the 10,500 cases, but we're certainly going to do that on the first 400. The reason for that is really an issue of sort of an audit between the DPD laboratory and our laboratory and the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office of what actually needs to be processed, because they are saying that they are all investigated properly. Some of the things we're going to look at are whether they were previously adjudicated. And remember that I said that every one of these cases covers the gamut of every section that the case can actually appear in. Whether the suspect was identified previously through means other than DNA, but his or her profile is available in CODIS as an offender. A lot of these are the willingness of the victim to actually prosecute. Advocates are very interested in looking at that part of it. Some very simple things about the prosecutability of the cases. Many of these don't even have police reports associated with them. The only information that we would have is a medical history form that's within the sexual assault kit. For the laboratory side of things, much like what Dean was mentioning, we're going to be capturing information on how many are positive for the presence of male DNA, how many have a positive male result for the actual STR typing, how many are eligible for CODIS, and then how many are ultimately identified as an offender within the database. And this will help us to develop our business plan on how much resources and efforts that we need based on where they fall out of the system based on the type of evidence that we're getting. Oddly enough, Dean and I didn't talk about our talks ahead of time, but I've got almost the same statement that you had. It's a huge challenge, there is no doubt. And 2 years ago, I would have never anticipated that I was going to be dealing with a project like this. But there are certainly some challenges associated with it. We certainly have very limited resources. We've hired these 10 additional people, but that barely touches the amount of evidence that's coming in. There's very different viewpoints from one focus group to another, which has been challenging but very interesting. Outsourcing casework, as Dean covered, has its own challenges. Outstate law enforcement agencies have very similar issues to Detroit, only the numbers are a little bit smaller. And by doing this, we're going to be setting a new level of service that hopefully will be duplicated throughout the state. And also with the challenges come some rewards. I've dealt or built some incredible relationships. What I'm finding is that within the city of Detroit, no matter what your viewpoint is on the situation, whether you're an advocate or with the law enforcement agency or one of the attorneys handling it, they're all an incredibly dedicated and professional group to work with. And the other thing I wanted to point out is that as we talk about backlogs and we talk about very large numbers, and I know that it'll fall on ears that are sympathetic to this, but let's not forget that each one of those sexual assault kits actually represents an individual with a name and a story. And I think that's an important thing to point out. And, again, it's also an opportunity to make an incredible impact on a very impoverished city right now. As far as pending legislation, there's one piece of legislation that is pending in front of the state legislature. It is being proposed by Senator Tupac Hunter, and it's very different than the legislation that you see some other places where it's requiring sexual assault kits to actually be submitted to the laboratory. This is more of a notification type of piece of legislation. It's called the Assault Victims Right Act, and basically what it does is just keeping the sexual assault victim up to speed on exactly what is going on with his or her case, and all the way through the process from identifying an individual and having samples and CODIS and all that kind of information. And solutions, much like what Dean was mentioning, there are certainly some IT solutions that can be associated with this. One of them being we have a lot of different LIM systems and court system information systems and all of that stuff, but they don't talk to each other. And it would be very useful to have a type of system that actually can talk to each other so that we're not doing quite as much wasted work. Submission policies are a huge thing. And then, of course, as we move evidence throughout, the state video testimony is a huge endeavor of ours. All seven of our laboratories have video testimony capabilities. It's just a matter of getting them out to the courts. We've already amended the court rules to accept video testimony as testimony. It's just that a lot of defense experts are not accepting of it. And then finally, these CSE kits in the city of Detroit caught us a little bit by surprise, and it would be beneficial to have some sort of a CSE kit tracking system so that you can actually see where the backlog is going to be before it actually gets to numbers that are outside of concept. And then that's my contact information. Thank you very much.